This morning I'd ask you to turn with me to the book of James in chapter 3. Those of you who have been able to go to the Bible study down in Louisville, Kentucky, have been hearing Trey recently preach and teach through the book of James a little bit, so you're going to be a little bit ahead of us. What you do know of the book of James probably is that James is a book. Without those, of course, he says that our faith is dead. James has been teaching about the need for fruit-bearing faith. He's been speaking about sanctification and the process of becoming mature and complete. And then in chapter 1, just at the very beginning of the letter, in verse 4, he uses the word when he writes, and he says, "And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing." And that word for perfect, the word for complete there, is teleoi in Greek, which is the idea of maturity. Maturity in your mental and in your moral character and those kinds of things. And so this is really what we're working at our in our series of Walking with Christ, is maturing. James has told us that a faith that involves a hearing of the word without an actual doing of that word is a worthless word. It's not a saving faith at all. True faith will yield deeds, demonstrations of the faith in action, a change in a person's life in some way as it's demonstrating that. So as James begins chapter 3 now, this is a little bit later in his letter, he provides us with a particular key illustration of that maturity. One specific area of our lives that really needs to have changed or needs to be in the process of changing. And that's that area of the use of our tongue, of our speech. So let's read and hear chapter 3, beginning at chapter 3, verse 1, and I'll read down through verse 12. Keeping in mind what he's already said about words and deeds and so on, now this is what he says. "Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. For we all stumble in many ways. And if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle his whole body. If we put bits into the mouths of horses so that they obey us, we guide their whole bodies as well. Look at the ships also, though they are so large and are driven by so strong winds, they are guided by a very small rudder, wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, and yet it boasts of great things. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature can be tamed, and has been tamed by mankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse people who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and salt water? Can a fig tree, my brothers, bear olives, or a grapevine produce figs? Neither can a salt pond yield fresh water." I ask God to bless the reading of his word as we now think and study it a little bit. In verse 2, James addresses every reader. He's speaking to you and me, and he says, we all stumble in many ways. The implication is that none of us can really completely be free of sin yet on this side of heaven. And what's more, he indicates that a very common way in which we demonstrate our weakness and our brokenness in that area is our careless speech. He makes it clear that there's no sin into which it's easier to fall, no sin which has more frightening consequences than a sin of the tongue. As he's been wrestling with how to show deeds that are coming from a life of faith, this is the first barometer to measure how that's going. Let's look at our tongues this morning and say, how are we doing in our maturing in the faith? Among our biggest battles is this restraint of evil as it's demonstrated by the use of our tongue. So James spends the better part of the first half of this passage warning the believer of all the damage that the tongue can do, how dangerous it is. He likens it to a forest fire. Now, I was just out in Colorado not too long ago, and they had been having some bad fires. In fact, I wasn't sure if I could go from Colorado Springs back to where my brother Tom lives, because the fires had been going through that very area and the pass had been closed two or three days before. Out in California, of course, we've been praying recently for some of the folks out in Fresno in that area because of the tremendous fires that are going on there. So they would have a better view of this than we will this morning. I don't know if you've ever been in a huge forest fire or been in that area of a forest fire like that, but it's a very vivid picture. And here, fire is getting out of control, he says, and that's the kind of thing it can do. And then James says, the tongue is like a fire. Careless words spoken out of our mouths run like a wildfire into places that we did not intend. They get out of control. They're doing damage that we did not necessarily intend. He likens this to another illustration. He's got ideas going through his head. You can see how many metaphors he uses. If you've got a ship here, he's got horses, he's got fires, and he's got all kinds of things. Now he's saying it's out of control tongue is like a restless evil full of deadly poison. He's picturing a snake with fangs full of deadly poison. And when we slash out with words, sometimes we're doing that just like a snake bite. That kind of damage can be done. So it's probably a good area for us to focus on in terms of our thinking about maturing in our walk with Christ. We got to think about how we speak to one another. He tells us if anyone doesn't stumble in what he says, he's a perfect man. That word perfect is the same word that we've been wrestling with, teleoi. It's the idea of being complete, mature in the faith. So if somebody does not stumble in what his tongue is, he is mature. He has reached that point. So this is an area we want to wrestle in and grow in. God would have us be this, complete. He would have us be mature. And in order for that to happen, in order to gain control of this small little thing in our mouth, this tongue, we're going to have to be very intentional. And I'd like to approach the topic this morning just two ways. I'd like to talk about the things that we should think aright about our tongue, things to remember about our speech, and then some things to practice in terms of our speech as we want to grow in maturity. How can we go from here this week and begin to practice some things that will help us grow? So things to remember about our speech first. First thing to remember about this is what we read in Proverbs chapter 18. And it used this little phrase in verse 21 that said, death and life are in the power of the tongue. Death and life. I would love it this morning if I could have a very visual illustration. I'd have a big sign on one side that says, I don't know which side I would put it on. I guess I put life over here and death over here. Clear on opposite sides of that. And I'd like to speak about our words having either this effect or that effect. It's quite a statement. Your speech is a matter of life and death. I don't know if you think of it this way. The previous verse in that Proverbs 18 says this, and it helps explain it a little bit. It says, from the fruit of a man's mouth, his stomach is satisfied. He is satisfied by the yield of his lips. What's that mean? It means the idea is that a person's speech impacts their life, what happens in their life, the success of their life, depending on how well they spoke. If they have spoken well, they will eat the fruit of their speaking well. If they have spoken ill, they will suffer the impact of their speech. So more to our point today is how we believers are using our tongues. Is it for the promotion of this thing we talk about life? Are we promoting life with our speech, or are we really tearing it down? Are we tearing life down? Proverbs 12, verse 18. Proverbs is full of addressing the matter of the tongue. And in 12:18 it says, there is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts. If you were looking to where you'd categorize sword thrusts, I would imagine it would be over here on the death side. That's what sword thrusts bring about. But then he goes on to say that the tongue of the wise brings healing. That's life. This is the spectrum we're dealing with, is our words are either doing this or they are doing that. It's a realization we must have and acknowledge that the tongue has this kind of power. And it's doing one or the other every time we open our mouth. Think of that. It is doing somewhere on this spectrum between life and death every time we speak. Every word falls in that spectrum of either tearing down or healing, or the slow poisoning of life, or the building up of life. I have encountered people in their latter years of life as a pastor who these older folks are still reeling from the stab wounds that they have received in their childhood, whether it was from a parent or from some teacher or something like that. I hear some 60 years later of how that stab wound back then is still rotting away their soul. That's the kind of speech that the power this has. Poison was administered as a child, and it has been working its destructive force in their life ever since. We probably all can testify to that kind of happening even sometimes in our own life. We've had someone inject, as it were, painful words, sometimes even with intent to cause pain. Criticisms and lies and complaints, insults, slander, grumblings, libel, defamation, accusations, slurs. As I started to write that list, you know, you're typing away on your computer and you're thinking a few things, I thought I could keep going for several minutes. It's astounding how many English words we have that describe what damage you can do with the tongue. I have come within a hair's breadth, I'll tell you, of never listening to talk radio again in my life. The network news stations aren't that much better, and television talk shows are equally guilty of these things. For it seems to me, in my short lifetime, that reporting, news reporting, on how our politicians, for example, are trying to address social problems, and that's how at least it used to be, it seemed to me, was that they were talking about how these politicians, they were differing in their opinions, but they were trying to wrestle with social issues that they were trying to solve on behalf of the people of God, or of the people of the society. But now it's become reporting on how one party is slandering the other party and bad-mouthing the other and lying about the other and how they can get one another to do this. It's as if this is all that happens in Washington now, is what's happening is slander and libel and all those words that I had a minute, defamation and grumbling and insults and slurs, and this is what characterizes our news. We typically look to certain measures to help evaluate our condition in the society. What is our moral state as a nation? We look at things like, what do people entertain themselves with? What are we doing on, what are we watching on TV? What are the movies that are popular in our society that are making great progress? We may look at the pregnancy teen rate, you know, the teen pregnancies and how that's happening. We may wrestle with all kinds of divorce rates and sort of say, this is the barometer we're going to use to measure our condition as a society. But I suggest to you that an area that has been really sorely neglected when evaluating our condition, our spiritual well-being as a nation, is the area of our speech. How do we speak about and how do we speak to one another? It's not really a new problem, though. It's not something that's just developed in the last couple years, but it's very real. I find the psalmist is interestingly stating in Psalm 12 that we just sang, verses 1 through 4, he states, this is how he kind of evaluated his society, and this is what he says, if you remember. Save, O Lord, because the godly one is gone. For the faithful have vanished from among the children of men. Everyone utters lies to their neighbor. With flattering lips and a double heart they speak. May the Lord cut off all flattering lips, the tongue that makes great boasts, those who say, With my tongue I will prevail. Our lips are with us. Who's the master over us? You see, he's using how they spoke in society as an evaluation of the condition of that society. So I want you and me this morning to see the danger of the tongue, to see that statement to be real about it having death or life in it. See how our society fails in the use of the tongue and commit to living for Christ by being different than that. If you would be a mature believer in Jesus Christ, you cannot use your tongue in that way. We should realize not only the danger of the bad use of the tongue. If I spoke of death over here, I want us to think about how to use our tongues for life and healing and edifying. It's interesting that Paul wrote to the Ephesian church, and he reminds them that no unwholesome talk is supposed to come out of their mouth, but only words that give edification and grace to the hearer. That, I assume, would be life. That's the kind of speech that builds up and fortifies life. Jesus indicated, and he does this in Matthew when he's speaking, he says that our speech is really a window into our soul. If you would give edification and grace, like Paul's saying in Ephesians, we're supposed to do, then your heart has to be filled with edification and grace in order to let that out. And the challenge is written in the context in Ephesians, you'll remember, of all the things that are supposed to be put off. You put this off and you put this on. In this case, the death over here. You put these things off and you put on the good. So stop doing this, tearing down with your tongue. Start building up with your tongue. You put off corrupting speech and you put on edifying speech. And I just want to mention in that phrase that Paul's using there, when he talks about corrupting speech, he uses an interesting Greek word called sapros. You learned something today. Sapros. It's corrupting speech. The word means rotting. Rotting speech. Put off words that rot in people's hearts. Words that bring about decay and destruction in their lives. Put on words, he says, instead, that build up, edify. The word is a derivative of the same word that we have for house in Greece, oikos. It's oikodomain. Words that build the house of this other person's life. Your words will either build up and strengthen the house, or it will rot the house, decay the house, tear it down. Words have that power. Every word we speak falls somewhere between life and death, between building up and rotting. And the Proverbs, as we said, they contain countless warnings about the use of our tongue and how dangerous it is. What happens when it's not a bridled tongue? How it can tear down. Just as words can be used for death, I'd like us to think again of how they can be used for life. I've done a lot of work in school settings. My undergraduate degree was in education. I taught for a couple of years. I've been a part of Paideia here. I've been in other school settings quite a bit. And so I've been in the education process a lot. And what that has allowed me to do is see children and the effect that words have on children. I have repeatedly seen how powerful those words are and how positive, upbuilding words can support and strengthen a child. When a fellow student or a teacher comes alongside a child who's thinking of themselves as valueless or has been belittled by the other children, maybe this child has had lots of inoculating words that have torn down and are rotting in his soul even then. And someone comes along, whether it's a student or another teacher, a parent who comes alongside that student and speaks a word of care and concern for the child and love for the child and interest in the child and hope for the child. You can see life come into that child again. You can visibly see their body strengthen. You can visibly see the difference before and after the words have been spoken. You can see it tear down and you can watch it build up. And that's true not just for children. It's true for you and me, isn't it? We like to hear words that build up. And the ones that tear down eat us and rot in our soul. So as we seek to mature in our walk with Jesus Christ, we want to put a tight rein on our tongue, that it might be used for good and not for harm. But in order to do that, secondly, we have to remember that something else. I said there's things we have to remember about speech. One of those is the truth about it. Life and death is in the power of the tongue. Secondly, we have to remember that our tongues are connected to something else, and that's our heart. You cannot alter what you plan to speak with your mouth if you don't change your heart. Good speech comes from a good heart. He says in verse 16, where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, I suggest where they are in the heart, there will be disorder and every evil practice. I said that Jesus connects those two. He in Matthew 15, 18, he makes it clear that whatever comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart. So if I connect those two verses, so if there's jealousy and selfishness in my heart, you will get evil speech. You will get a mouth that is filled with those things, both evil speech coming from the mouth and evil practice in the hands. So if we would labor to grow and mature in our speech and demonstrate it in our speech, we have to begin here, not here. Okay? A person dedicating themselves, okay, I'm just going to be careful not to say. That's not the first place to start. The first place to start is a dealing with your own heart. The wise and mature saint, says verse 17 in our passage. It describes them, and this is what it says. But the wisdom from above is first pure and peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. You see, these are the things that are in the heart of the saint. These are characteristics of a redeemed heart. And notice it says things like full of mercy. That's what's going on here. A person who is full of mercy will then speak mercy to people, right? If a heart is full of peace and quiet before God, it will speak peace and quiet. Full of compassion, it will be speaking compassionate words. And of course, you know that the flip side is true. I hate to think of the negative side of this, but unfortunately, we experience it all the time. Snappy, sharp, angry, critical words that overflow, we know, from a heart that's angry and snappy and bitter and lacking in joy. Do you remember the character? This is a Bible quiz this morning. Do you remember the character Eliphaz? Do you know who he is? Eliphaz is one of the supposed friends of Job. And I don't want to get into how he addresses Job. You can decide for yourself whether he's a good counselor, whether he's really a friend or not. I'm not sure you can go that far. But Eliphaz makes a statement about Job that just simply I want to highlight. It must have been an idiom in their culture to address the situation, because he says at one point, "Your iniquity, Job, teaches your mouth." He was accusing Job of iniquity, of sin in his heart. Job, you've got some sin in your life. That's why you're speaking the way you are. You don't get it. And I want to evaluate Eliphaz's counsel here. I don't usually think that's his counsel is all that great. But what he says there is true. The idiom that they must have in their culture is that the heart teaches the mouth. You've got sin in your life. It's going to make you say sinful things. If you're full of good things, it'll teach your mouth to speak good things. What's inside comes out. But grace does the same thing. If a heart is full of grace, it teaches your mouth and good will come out. Words spoken at the proper time and with the proper motive, what do? They encourage, they build up, they strengthen, they bring grace to the person who's the hearer. And if you would be such a minister of healing, then you have to fill your heart first with a love for God and for your neighbor. I want to tie in every week. I hope you hear this. I want you to go back to the basics. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart. Love your neighbor as yourself. And when you love God and your heart is full of those things, you will speak to your neighbor and you will build up. Okay? This is things we want to see again and again. So the tongue is connected to the heart. We've spoken about things to remember, and then the speech is connected to the heart. But now let's talk a little bit about practicing things that we can work on as we go home. The first one comes from our passage, I think, in verse 1. And I'm stretching just a tiny bit here, but I really think it's true here. And I'm going to phrase it this way. Be humble when you speak. Don't presume to be everyone's teacher. Earlier in James, he has been warning us to be slow to speak. Be quick to listen, he says in verse 19 of chapter 1, but slow to speak. He's also told us in verse 26, if a man considers himself religious, but he can't keep a tight rein on his tongue, he deceives himself and his religion is worthless. Tight rein on the tongue. These are warnings given not only to a Hebrew Christians that James is addressing, he's speaking to everyone. Keeping a tight rein on the tongue. You know what reins are used for, right? There's two words in the English language, as far as I know, three that sound like rein. Reign in terms of the kingship, somebody who's reigning and ruling over things. That's not the word we're using here. We're using the one that's used on a horse. It's the leather straps that go back from the bridle on a horse back to where the rider is, okay? That's the reins we're talking about. And you know what they're used for? They're used to control the horse, to direct and to stop his forward motion. When pulled on, got a pen, it's like this, there's a metal bit in the mouth of the horse, and when you pull on the reins, which are attached to the bit, it bites into the back of their mouth. It hurts. It's not comfortable. And so a horse who's been just running along forward thinking things are fine, when the bit goes tight because the reins are tight, he stops his forward motion because he wants to stop the pull on his mouth. Think about the dynamics of what we're being told here. Keep a tight rein on your mouth. Stop. It's saying stop speaking. Be slow to speak and quick to listen. I think that's very clear here. Tight reins to keep a rein on our tongue means that we must be ready to yank on the rein to put a stop to forward motion of our tongue. We must use self-control to stop our speech when we're provoked and we want to respond quickly. Maybe we want to respond in a negative way. We must control ourselves. Again, every word I speak is going to be on a spectrum between building up and tearing down. And my inclination, because I have an old heart, often is to speak quickly on this side. And I'm to put a stop to that immediately and now bring self-control to bear on what I'm dealing with so that I can turn it this direction. We have to control what we say. It doesn't mean never speaking again. It means controlling what is said so that it's not on this part of the spectrum. It's on this part of the spectrum. We must quickly get the reins and pull when we're provoked. We must take control rather than giving our mouth free rein. You know, I think there's some confusion in that idiom, that phrase in English. He has free rein. Some people may think that's the kingship side of things, that he can rule how he wants. That's not what the word means. That's not where it comes from. It comes from this use of the rein. Because free rein means you've dropped the straps. There's nothing pulling back anymore. The horse can go wherever he wants. He can do what he wants. He can move forward. That's that use. And the tongue is not a horse, friends. The tongue, as we've been told in James, is a restless evil. It is a deadly poison. So it must always have a tight rein on it. You see, you can never give it its will because it will always side here on its natural course. Don't allow it to have free rein. It must never be given that. It must always be under control. Keep a tight rein so that words don't come easily out of your mouth, quickly out of your mouth. One of the things we're dealing with in our life is pride, and pride is an enemy to self-control in this area because our pride suggests to us in our heart of hearts that we have, what we have to say is vital for everyone to hear. You know that's right, right? I mean, I know this is true of me. I'm very guilty of this. If people would just hear what I have to say and pay heed to my counsel, then things would go well in the world. But I have a manual of sanctification that God has given me, this book, the Bible. And it instructs me, and it says, you be slow to speak, Andy. You be careful about speaking. Don't presume to be everybody's teacher. You be quick to listen. Some of the direct statements in the book of Proverbs make the point without mincing words at all. They don't hold back. That one we read in verse 2 of Proverbs 18 when we had that read. Listen to it again. A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion. Wow. That's a fool who does that. I don't want to understand what you're saying to me as much as I want you to hear my side of the story. Verse 13 says, if one gives an answer before he hears, it's folly. It's shameful. You know, I think one of my great aspirations as a young man is to be a counselor. I wanted to be able to help people and give counsel to them. How much more important it would have been for me to spend my time learning to be a good listener. Listener. It's not that counseling isn't good. It's not that teaching isn't good. We should all labor at being better at those things, but primary in our effort ought to be the control of the tongue so that we listen first and become those who understand before we give our opinion. So, practice these things. Not many of you ought to presume to be teachers. Why? Because we all stumble in many ways. Practice humility, friends. This is something to work on this week. Control your tongue as you practice humility. And I really want to make a separate point, the second point here, of being intentional about bridling your speech. Practicing that tight rein on your tongue. Proverbs 10:19 says, when there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. If you are one who speaks a lot, you will sin. That's what he's saying. But he who restrains his lips, who keeps a tight rein, that's the wise person. Like the psalmist in Psalm 141, verse 3, it would do us well then to pray what he prays. Lord, set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Restrain my lips. Keep watch over the door of my lips, is the way he puts it. Think before you speak. Stay in control of what proceeds from your mouth. Allow no rash words. Our words can get us in a lot of trouble and cause much pain. Proverbs 14, verse 3, by the mouth of a fool comes a rod for his back, but the lips of the wise will preserve them. And I'll say that when someone is intentionally trying to use words to harm, they're almost always successful. Almost always. Trying to hurt others, they will be successful. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will cause the rotting of your soul and the soul of others and their emotions and their heart. You have to remember that careless or thoughtless words that we speak, and I know what I mean by that is we're not trying to cause harm, but thoughtless and careless words can have the same effect as words that were spoken with malicious intent. So often we're hurt by careless words that others have spoken. They didn't intend to harm us. They weren't really trying to break us down. They just didn't think, and they said something, and it hit us a certain way, and it's on this side of the spectrum. Those words still have their effect. So we have to be careful. We have to be watchful. So be intentional about your speech. Third, be intentional about building up, speaking on this side of the spectrum. Be intentional to do that. Paul urges us to put on good speech as the antidote to the other side, to the rotting speech, the careless speech. In an area where so much harm can be done by the tongue as a Christian, we're to use redemptive purposes. Use the tongue for redemptive things. Let no corrupting talk come out of your mouth, but only such as is good for building up, as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to the one who hears. That's the only kind of speech the believer is allowed to make. That which gives grace. That which builds up. No corrupting talk is allowed out of my mouth or your mouth. Only that which builds up. So be a positive influence on everything around you. It's a great way to do unto others as you would have them do unto you, right? Oh, imagine. Just imagine. If people only spoke to you in such a way that built you up, brought healing to your life, encouraged you. Oh boy, would life change, wouldn't it? Right? It would be amazing. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Speak that way. Again, Proverbs 12:25. Anxiety in a man's heart weighs him down, but a good word makes him glad. It lifts us up. It builds us up. Share a good word with other people. When you speak, keep the tight rein away from this side and release it over here. Okay, that's what we're to do. Finally, one more area, very briefly. One particular thing to practice in your speech is to diffuse relational fires or tensions with soft words. I don't think much runs contrary to our old nature than speaking gently and in love when we've been provoked by someone. It just simply doesn't come naturally. Maybe somebody's provoking us and our natural inclination is to get angry. It's very hard to use soft words to put out the fire. We're not good at turning the other cheek, are we? We know that when someone provokes us, they've poured fresh gasoline on a pile of old dried tinder, right? They have presented to us an opportunity to start a bonfire, to have a fire storm right here in our midst, right? But once again, God urges his children to grab the reins in that moment. They have presented me with a bonfire here that I could add fire to and I could add fuel to myself, and we'll light a blaze that will just do damage. But friends, we've got to grab the reins and use control. Be redemptive in the moment. Be redemptive. Proverbs 15:1. A soft answer turns away wrath. It does. A harsh word stirs up anger. Lights the fire of the fuel that he's just given you opportunity to. So this is a positive use. It's something to practice in your speech this week. The redemptive use of that which can do so much damage. Turn that evil instrument, the fangs, if you will, into a tool of good to extinguish the fire. It's all God's transforming power through his Spirit that does this work, right? And turns this dangerous instrument in my mouth into that which brings healing and grace. Again, in our pursuit of maturity and walking with Christ, you've been given something very specific today to go home and work on. And I just pray that God will strengthen you by his Spirit in your speech. Let's pray. Oh God, thank you for the directness of your word. Thank you for the metaphors and the illustrations to help us understand it. We have experienced painful speech, and we probably have also experienced really healing speech. And so I thank you for life experience, which can help us in this area. I pray that as we seek to practice these things, your Spirit, O Lord, would be working in us to help us use that edifying word, we pray. We ask that you would build your people up and strengthen them in Jesus' name. Amen.